as Texas Tech does it. For the first time, they win two games at the College World Series. They will play on.
Texas Tech, the only team left for the Big 12 in college baseball. They stay alive yesterday in the College World Series in Omaha, knocking out Florida State, eliminating Florida State by a final of 4-1. So they are now into the final four. They were in men's basketball, and now they are in college baseball as they will move on to College World Series. And Mike Martin, the manager for Florida State, his last game as a head coach of Florida State baseball, 40 years as the manager, the skipper of Florida State, 2,029 wins in his career. Not too shabby. Made it to College World Series 17 of his 40 years. That's basically every other year. That's amazing consistency and success. But he retired after the loss last night. So Louisville, Mississippi State, that is an elimination game today. That's tonight at 7 o'clock on ESPN2. That's the only game on the schedule for today. And then we'll proceed to narrow it down to eventually having a national champion in men's college baseball. Any local sports to refer to, Dusty?
Not at this point. We we'll have some KBCA All-Star games coming up on Saturday, but we don't have any immediate area athletes that are playing in that, but we'll get all that post, talk a little bit more about that tomorrow on sports. So,
all right,
what's
sounds
going
good.
On locally?
Sounds good. The Royals were going for a sweep of the Mariners, but it's the Royals, so you knew it wouldn't be easy.
Santana clubs the first pitch way deep and way out of here into the bullpen. Number 14 for Domingo Santana wasted no time. Mariners at early 3-0 lead.
Well, it's hard when you get down early in baseball or any sport for that matter, but three runs right off the bat. And Brad Keller just didn't have his best stuff yesterday after he's been pitching very well recently. And Ned Yost talked about Keller and his command issues.
He just first inning really struggled to get the ball down. And just, you know, one of those days where he just battled it. He couldn't find a slot where he could consistently get down or down and away in the zone. I mean, slider caught too much of the plate to Santana for a homer, and it's just one of those days.
One of those days as the Royals fall behind 4-0 after one, end up losing by a final of 8-2. Royals 25-49. Brad Keller now 3-9 on the season, and Keller said after the game that he just didn't feel like he had much command even in the bullpen while he was warming up, which is never a good feeling. And trust me, the best pitchers that have ever done it have had nights like that. Sometimes they can get through and throw six innings, give up four runs, and not have their best stuff. Keller last night wasn't even quite that good. He had been really, really effective in his last five starts, but he was maybe due for one, and it was last night. So the Royals fall 8-2. Adalberto Mondesi out with groin tightness, so Nicky Lopez played short. Whit Merrifield, who played first base for a couple of games, now shifted to second base. He went 0-5 last night. Cuthbert playing third, had a couple of hits. Bonifacio, who was called up recently, he had a couple of hits as well, and so did Nicky Lopez playing short. As the Royals, when you look at their lineup, Merrifield batting first, Cuthbert second, Gordon third, and Gordon's now scuffling. He's down to .261, his batting average. Soler, who's been hitting basically a whole bunch of home runs, or he doesn't hit at all, hitting .243, but he has 20 homers, and he has quite a few RBIs. Bonifacio hitting fifth, Nicky Lopez sixth, Lucas Duda playing first, seventh, which Duda just, I've never ever understood why he was on this team this year, but... Kim Gallagher was catching last night, gave Maldonado a night off, and or yesterday afternoon, and Billy Hamilton's only hitting .224. Listen, this is how I feel. I know a lot of Royals fans feel this way, so this will be probably the popular opinion, but the Royals stink right now as it is, right? Can we agree on that? When you're 25-49, which means you win one out of every three games, you're not very good.
Yeah.
So if we're going to be bad, why don't we just go ahead and give some guys a chance right now? And what I mean by that is, I know Hunter Dozier is on the injured list. He'll be back soon. Bonifacio will go back down, and that's fine. I don't know where Bonifacio fits in the future of the Royals. I mean, he has some pop in his bat. Lopez is young. They think he's going to be the second baseman in the future. Your shortstop, of course, is Mondesi. You like Dozier at third. I don't know who your first baseman in the future is. Ryan O'Hearn was sent down because he's really struggled. And everybody got all excited about what Ryan O'Hearn did last year in August and September. And I say this every single year. I don't care what you did in August and September, especially if you're out of the race, because there's not as much pressure. And pitchers haven't seen you. And then all of a sudden there's tape on you. And now what do? They adjust. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, hey, I'm the starting first baseman for the Royals in 2019. And he hit 190. And you just don't, you struggle at the plate. And so Ahearn's back in the minors trying to find it. So you have Lucas Duda playing first. So when you go through the Royals lineup here, and I'm not saying that, you know, I don't know who I should put at first coming up from the minors. I mean, it would have to be obviously Ahearn. So let him find things and come back up. But Merrifield, let's ask the question. 3 years from now, because that's what people say, 3 years from now, that's when the Royals should be able to contend again. Are you with me on that? Do you think it'll be sooner?
I thought it would, but
now I'm not.
I'm not so sold on that anymore.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Of the starting lineup last night, we're going to go through this one by one. You tell me if these players will be a Royal 3 years from now and be part of a contending team. If, in fact, 3 years from now, that ends up being correct. That's when they contend again for the division title and try to make a playoffs. Whit Merrifield.
I'm going to say yes. I mean, his contract says he will be, but I'll say yes.
He is certainly maybe one of the most marketable, tradable players right
now.
That's
the only thing.
And the Royals could get probably a pretty good haul for him, but whether or not they choose to or not, I said this the other day on the show, if he's 25, 26, I don't think about trading him because of his contract.
Yeah.
But when he's 30, is he really going to be, I mean, he leads the American League in hits again. He led the league last year. Can he keep this up all the way till he's 34, 33? I don't know, man. Cuthbert's playing third. He was a non-roster invitee this year.
Yeah.
They had given up on him. Do you think he's going to be on this team 3 years from now?
I don't.
Okay. Alex Gordon, I don't think will be. Jorge Soler, 3 years from now.
I'm going to say no because I really think he's a real tradable piece if he continues to hit like he is. People want power hitters.
They do. But that's all he does is hit home runs.
Yeah. But that's happened before at deadlines where people get guys like all they do is hit home. Jay Bruce is probably one of them.
I think for some reason Dayton Moore likes Soler in the power, and he's younger, and I think he will be on this team 3 years from now. And I think he'll have these inflated numbers on teams that aren't it very good. He's going to get his money. The Royals are going to keep him. I don't know if that's the right decision, but I'll differ with you. I agree with your thinking totally.
Yeah.
But I think Dayton Moore, because that was part of the Wade Davis trade, and we got a guy that could set the single-season record for homers for the Royals and break Moustakas' record. He's on pace to hit over 40. I think somehow he will be a part of this team 3 years from now. I don't know if that's the right decision. Bonifacio, will he be on this Major League roster 3 years from now? I'm going to say no.
I know.
Nicky Lopez?
I would hope.
You better hope so.
Yeah. Yes. I'm going to say yes.
If he's not, then...
Because if he doesn't pan out, then this whole thing is...
We're in trouble.
Not what we're talking about anymore.
Lucas Duda?
No.
Cam Gallagher?
No.
Billy Hamilton?
No.
Okay, so 1, 2, 3, 4... 6 of the 9 last night are not going to be on this team 3 years from now. And you actually said 7. And maybe 8 if Merrifield gets traded.
We got wild colored with Soler and Merrifield, but Nicky Lopez.
The only guy in that lineup last night that we both agree for sure will be here 3 years from now, or at least we feel good about it, is Nicky Lopez, who's played in the majors for a month.
Yeah.
And the other guy would be Mondesi, who wasn't in the lineup last night.
Yeah.
That's it. And here's another. How about one more? Salvador Perez. 3 years from now, will he be a part of this team? Well, he's got some young catchers.
He's hanging on like Alex Gordon if he is.
Yeah.
That's a wild card, too, because you just don't know how long he's going to go and how healthy he's going to be.
So let me ask you this. So when you look at this right now, and we hear, you know, Hosmer Moustakas took him 3 or 4 years to really get going in the big leagues. Okay, you've only got two guys that we just talked about, maybe three if you count Merrifield, that will have that 3 or 4 years of experience once they are supposed to be in contention again, which means you better hurry up and get these other guys up here fairly soon, or 3 years from now, you're probably not contending yet. If it takes them 3 or 4 years to develop at the big league level, like Hosmer and Moustakas and Salvi a few years, then the clock is ticking now, which leads me to the whole premise of my discussion that I started with. Bring up Bubba Starling. Billy Hamilton won't be part of this team. He's batting ninth. He's hitting .224. He has 6 RBIs on the year.
He's fast.
But he doesn't get on base. It doesn't do any good.
So everybody's like, he's tearing score. He's fast. Does he get on base?
Listen, this is...
Without help from somebody else in the eighth inning?
I don't understand what the Royals are doing from this standpoint. you, I mean, I'm just going to be blunt. They suck, okay? They're not very
There's
good.
No question.
Whit Merrifield said it early in the year, we're 2-9, but we're a much better team than this. And I was like, are you? And I love his enthusiasm. I love his confidence. But you're not hearing Whit Merrifield right now saying we're better than this.
No.
Because they're not.
No.
They're 25-49. But listen, this is what I don't understand. You have Terrence Gore, who's on the team predominantly to run. That's it. You're taking up a whole roster spot on a team that's 24 games under 500 to be your pinch runner. And the other day, it's the eighth inning, and Lucas Duda's the tying run, and he doesn't put Gore in the run. What in the... Why is he on the roster? So here's my thinking. Bubba Starling has got pretty good wheels. He's a really good defender. He's definitely come around this year, been more consistent to play in AAA Omaha. He also was a guy the Royals let go and brought back. They had given up on him, in essence.
Yeah.
He's 26, I believe. Listen, it's time to get... What's the word? What did Dick Vermeil say? It's time to take the diapers off, time to get ready and go play?
Yeah.
Said to Larry Johnson when Priest Holmes got hurt back in the day. Well, it's the same thing with Bubba Starling. Listen, you bring up Bubba Starling, and here's what you do. You send Gore down. You send Gore down. You don't. He has options.
Does he?
Well, maybe not. Whatever.
Because I don't know that he does.
Well, even if he doesn't, he isn't helping this team. He clearly isn't helping this team.
They had to sign him on a major league contract to get him back, which is insane to me.
Who's a better hitter and who's a better defender? It's Bubba Starling.
Yeah, without question.
And so, boom, and he has good speed. Billy Hamilton has amazing wheels. Here's what you do, in my opinion. You bring up Bubba Starling and you put him in center. And you let him say, you're an everyday player, and we'll see how it goes. And Billy Hamilton, who has tremendous speed, is now your designated pinch runner and a guy who can be a defensive replacement or play a couple days of the week. And if Starling struggles or if you don't want Starling to be out there every single day, and you say adios to Terrence Gore. Because Terrence Gore is not helping this team one iota at all. It's just a waste of a roster spot. And I have nothing against Terrence Gore. I like Terrence Gore. I love his speed. It was perfect when the Royals were trying to win a World Series. It was excellent. Good use of a secret weapon, which was not so secret at the end. Great. But you have Billy Hamilton. You have Bubba Starling right now. Go get him. Bring him up. Let him play. Because if we're going to stink, let's go ahead and stink with guys that we drafted that are actually playing well in the minors that, honestly, we got to see if he can play in the big league level at some point. What are we waiting for? What are we waiting for? That we need Bubba Starling to have a full great year at AAA before we bring him up? Oh, that ship sailed a long time ago, in my opinion. Okay, I understand it when it's his first, second year in the minors. Yeah. I get all that. I mean, it makes no sense to me. And then when you don't even bring him in to run for Lucas Duda, and why Duda's even on the roster is beyond me. But right now, that's about the only guy that can play at first, or Whit Merrifield. And then you got Whit Merrifield. You keep having to jerk him around every single position, which I don't think is good for anybody, because you just, like, every day mentally, like, okay, wait, what position am I going to play today? I mean, it's great he has that versatility. Don't get me wrong. And then the starting pitching, which has actually been pretty decent lately, but, okay, is Homer Bailey going to be part of this team in 3 years from now?
No.
Is Brad Keller? I would hope he is.
Yeah.
But I don't know. He's gone backwards this year.
It's not been a good year for him.
No, he hasn't. Lack control, although he did have the stretch of five good starts. Danny Duffy?
I don't know.
Jorge Lopez? A guy with ERA of 7.
Not as a starter.
He's in the bullpen now.
Yeah. He might be. You know, maybe he's going to be one of those Luke Hochevers or Wade Davises or something, like, moves to the bullpen and becomes good. But not as a starter. He's not going to be in that rotation in 3 years.
Glenn Sparkman?
Possibly.
I highly doubt it.
Doubt it, but...
Highly doubt he's in a rotation.
Yeah.
I mean, when you really look at this Royals team... If
Tovar and Singer and all those guys to be in the rotation in 3 years.
Absolutely. You have to, or you have no chance. And you got to hope they pan out. And then there's the Lynch kid who's really good, too. But that's in the minor leagues. What do they do to get to the big leagues? You look at the Royals' rotation, we felt pretty good about going in the season that they had a decent rotation, and they've got guys that, you know, you like Lopez's stuff. You thought it was a good find. He has regressed this year. You thought Keller was going to be your number one or number two starter. He's regressed this year. Danny Duffy's been okay, but he's Danny Duffy. He's just, you know, he's not going to be your guy that goes 7 every night like the best teams have. They're ace. The Royals don't have anybody like that. That's not Danny Duffy. Occasionally he'll do it. I mean, you got Glenn Sparkman and Homer Bailey in your rotation. Lord, that's not good.
And Bailey's been
the last couple starts. But he's not part of the future.
No.
You look at the bullpen. Jake Diekman's a tradable piece. He's their best guy in the bullpen right now. Ian Kennedy's gone after this year. We know that. Yeah. He's your closer. Willie Peralta, he ain't going to be here 3 years from now. So when you start sitting here and you hear various things. Well, you know, it took Hosmer, Moustakas. Remember, God have patience, because Hosmer, Moustakas, and those guys, it took them, you know, 3-4 years in the bigs to really hit their stride. Well, if the Royals are going to compete in 3 or 4 years, then basically beginning of next year, we got to have some of these guys coming up that are showing signs that they're going to be part of this team 3 or 4 years from now. And if they're not, then it's actually a contention might be 5 years from now or six or seven. Because right now, the only guys you can say with somewhat certainty, 3 years from now, for 2022, is Mondesi, Lopez, maybe Soler. Two, maybe three, that you can say you feel really confident they're going to be a part of this team 3 years from now. Three out of 25 guys on the roster. That does not tell me they're close and they're within 2 or 3 years from now they're going to make this run. That's not a good sign at all.
No.
So you have to count on these guys you drafted college pitchers last year.
Bobby Witt going to be ready in 3 years? Probably not. That's the only hope you have on that.
Which you don't want to rush him.
No, you don't.
Yeah. Then where does he play?
Yeah.
Outfield, probably. You know, Hunter Dozier would be one you'd expect.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
Hunter Dozier can't stay healthy.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's had a good couple months, and now all of a sudden he's hurt again. He's a guy that can't stay healthy, and he's finally found it, at least it seems like. But I think the pitchers are going to eventually adjust against him. So you can't count on Hunter Dozier being part of it 3 years from now. But if you're optimistic, you could say Merrifield. You could be optimistic. Merrifield, Soler, Lopez, Mondesi, and who did I just say?
Dozier.
And Dozier. So now you start going, well, that's five. That's not so bad. When you start thinking of it that way.
Yeah.
Which, okay, great.
Well,
but you got nothing for pitching.
Yeah.
Nothing. Not a single guy in the bullpen. Right now, you're sitting here going, yeah, he'll be here 3 years from now. They're going to completely turn over the whole bullpen and probably the whole starting rotation, except maybe Brad Keller. Listen, I've seen the Royals with great young players come up and had an unbelievable outfield with Dye. Of course, Dye they traded for. But Beltran, Dye, and Damon. That was an amazing outfield.
Yeah.
The Royals scored a whole bunch of runs. Starting pitching was horrible, and the bullpen was brutal. That's when they had Blotalico, as I called it. So the Royals could have 9 really good position players, and they bring them up to the big leagues, and it works out great. 3 years from now, the Royals might have a really nice lineup, but if they don't have starting pitching or a bullpen, it doesn't matter at all.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to be pessimistic, but come on, man. Look at this. I mean, just you look at the lineup last night, and I know Mondesi's not in it, but even if you put Mondesi in it, it's not great. And you're just sitting there going, well, who's the... Well, you need a superstar, too. You need at least a Moustakas and a Hosmer type of guy. And on this team, who is that? Mondesi would be one.
He's the closest to those guys.
Yes. But after that, who?
Nobody.
Soler?
I mean, you know, Witt's Witt. I mean, but he's not...
Maybe Lopez. I don't know.
You know, he's not the...
He's a really good player, very versatile. Is he a superstar? I wouldn't say so.
And I don't think Salvi's probably the closest thing the Royals actually had to a superstar in that run.
Yeah.
There was all that hype around Hosmer and Moustakas, but
right.
I don't know that I would ever call them superstars.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
Salvi was the closest one to being that was kind of bigger than anybody in the game at his position.
Yeah.
And he was. I mean, he for 2, 3, 4 years in a row there, he was the catcher.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody knew that he was the best one in the league, in the American League anyway, for sure. And so, I think he's probably the only one that would live up to that. I don't think anybody, you know, like I said, it was a lot of hype around those guys because they won a World Series.
Right.
And, you know, they were fun to watch and exciting.
But they really didn't have a superstar.
Yeah.
Remember, they didn't hit a lot of home runs either. Sparkman's on the hill tonight for the Royals as they will host the first place Minnesota Twins. The Royals are 23 games behind the Twins in the division. Former Royal Jake Odorizzi, who's 10-2 on the year, is pitching for Minnesota. He was part of the James Shields, Wade Davis trade with Tampa, which of course was the right move.
Oh yeah, I mean that's a guy too that like it took him a while into it. Now he's just great this year.
Absolutely. The one guy I left out, Jacob Junis. Do you think he'll be a part of this team 3 years from now? See, he should be.
He should be. Doing, yeah.
Like you would hope that Junis and Keller are a part of this team 3 years from now. I don't think Duffy will be, but if he is, I think he'll be a bullpen guy.
Yeah.
But Junis and Keller, if the Royals are going to do anything, those two have to be a part of this in 3 years from now, don't they?
Yeah.
And they'd be the established veteran presences at that time.
Better
and then you bring up
for
Singer
Keller
and
would be
guys
at the back end of the bullpen, and Junis probably too. But, you know, you want guys that are better than those guys as starters, so you don't have to rely on those
right
to be your guys.
If Keller's is your three or four starter and Junis is your five, and you got Singer and those college pitchers being your 1, 2, 3, now you've got something because you got some veteran presence, because now Keller and Junis would have 5, 6 years under their belt as a Major League Baseball pitcher. And you feel pretty good with them going out every day, but they might not be your they better not be your top of the line starters.
Yeah, and the thing that's in the back of your mind is like they weren't all those guys when they were winning the World Series, but the Royals don't have the pieces to trade for James Shields right now either. They definitely don't have the pieces to trade for Johnny Cueto right now. You know what I'm saying?
The only guy they got they can trade, and it wouldn't be for an established great pitcher, but it would be for a highly touted pitching prospect, would be Whit Merrifield.
Yeah.
You know, that could get the gelato guy that now has finally figured it out. He was a prime prospect that the Royals were talking about at one point with Kelvin Herrera going to the Nationals, and he was with the Nationals in their system. And eventually the White Sox made a trade, and they traded Adam Eaton to the Nationals as part of that whole big deal, and they got the gelato. And Gelato was horrible last year. He had one of the worst ERAs of any starting pitcher in Major League Baseball. Now this year, he's a Cy Young candidate.
Yeah.
Because it finally is clicking for him. And sometimes that happens for young guys. So I think the Royals could get their ace. It could be their top-of-the-line starter trade with Whit Merrifield, but it's not going to be a guy you know yet because you're not going to trade Whit Merrifield and get Justin Verlander, you know, something like that. Chris Sale, that isn't happening.
Yeah.
Plus, the Royals don't have the financial resources to do it. And they're not going to rent a player, obviously, at this time either. So they're going to try to load their system. And that's what they're trying to do, is load their system with talent because it was so bare there for a while.
Yeah.
And it takes a while to rebuild your system, doesn't it?
Well, when you deplete it like that, it does.
Well, sure. You went for it. And that's the price you pay for winning a World Series and going for it. And the Royals are still suffering from that. And once again, I hate to beat a dead horse to death, but we said it when the Royals made the trade for Johnny Cueto, that everybody was all ecstatic, and we said, listen, we're cool with it too, but just remember, if the Royals don't win a World Series, it's going to be a mistake. But if they win it, it'll work, but you better be willing to pay the piper down the line. And we said 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the line. Well, here we are, 4 years down the line. The Royals are still paying for it. They're still paying for it. Why did the Royals pick a whole bunch of college pitchers last year? Because they don't have anybody in their minor league system that is ready to be a starter. I mean, why do you think Homer Bailey?
All their pitchers. Even A.J. Puckett for Melky Cabrera.
Right.
I mean, he was like.
Which was a bad deal, but Puckett hadn't done nothing with the White Sox yet either. But you don't. I mean, you sit here and you're like, oh, God. You know, I know Homer Bailey's better than Chris Young right now, but the fact you have Homer Bailey and Glenn Sparkman in your rotation is an indictment, once again, of your minor league system. You don't have anybody in the minors that's ready to be called up, ready to start. You don't have anybody. Josh Domont, they're using as an opener in the minors, and he has a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, and he's had control issues his whole career, but he's got great stuff. Well, great stuff's great, but if you can't throw for strikes, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And they thought would be, well, he could be our closer of the future, and he's in the bullpen and all this. Well, now they made an opener, which, if you don't know what an opener is, it's basically a relief pitcher starting. He pitches 2 or 3 innings, and then you go to your starter, which is not really your starter. It would be. It's funny how they say it. But the Rays have used it, and it's worked out pretty well. Well, Stalmont's been lights out as an opener. So maybe that's what the Royals got to do, is go to the opener and try that type of thing. But other than Josh Stalmont, I can't name you one pitcher in the minor leagues right now that is near breaking into the bigs of the Royals. And thus, Glenn Sparkman. And you know, the other sad thing is, Jorge Lopez was supposed to be a big part of this rotation, and he was demoted to the bullpen in favor of Homer Bailey, who was struggling at the time, and Glenn Sparkman. I mean, basically, Jorge Lopez was benched and sent to the bullpen in favor of Glenn Sparkman. And that's not a really good sign. at all.
But you know, rightfully so. He's been bad.
Right.
That's why it's not a good sign. You know,
he's almost through a no hitter last year.
I know. That's what's crazy about it.
Heath Philmeyer was another guy you thought was going to battle rotation or at least be part of your bullpen. He's not even the bigs right now.
Yeah.
So guys you thought were going to do something have absolutely not panned out. Now, is that because the Royals are poor talent evaluators? Is it because they're not developing these guys at the minor league level? I don't know. Somebody's doing something.
Probably the same things we said about the Royals for about a four-year span.
Yes. Yes.
They're just not good talent evaluators. They can't get these guys ready for the major leagues. And then you caught lightning in a bottle.
Yes.
And everything changed.
And a few free agent signings.
Oh, maybe they can develop players. Maybe they can do this. Oh, but they traded for this guy because they need to win now. And so I think it's just all the same things we said for about 29 years. I
don't want to say the Royals were lucky when they won the World Series 2015 because they made it in 14 and they made it to Game 7. They had their share of luck in 2015. I mean, the errors by the Mets and all those games. I mean, it started the very first pitch of the World Series in 15 when a misplay was inside the park homer. I was there and I was like, that's not inside the park homer. Yeah. That's errors.
It kicks the ball in the center field. Kicks it to the wall.
But you think about that team that year. They didn't have any big home run hitters. I mean, Moose had a great postseason, a real good postseason hitting homers, but the Royals didn't have it. They were one of the lowest, if not the lowest, in regards to home runs in the American League that year, although they hit more homers in the postseason. But you think about, we talked about how Dayton Moore at the time, everything he touched turned to gold. Chris Young was a really important piece, especially out of the bullpen in the playoffs. Edison Volquez was a cheap pickup they got in free agency. He ended up being really important for the team. Ryan Madsen was a guy they didn't even, he was a non-roster invitee to camp. They never dreamt he'd be their seventh inning guy. Wade Davis, they didn't know he's going to turn into the dominant closer that when they traded for him from Tampa Bay. Shields was the guy they really wanted the most. And you just start looking at what the Royals did that year, and you're just like, wow, everything they touched turned to gold with their pickups. But ever since then, starting with the Alex Gordon signing, almost everything Dayton Moore has done in regards to all that has been
that. It was like a developing process, just like the team too. You got Irvin Santana, and he was outstanding,
right,
all the way up there until 2013. Right. It really helped with that.
Right.
You know, he was great, and then James Shields was very, very good, and you know, obviously was part of the first team that made it to the World Series in 2014, and you know, Jason Vargas who did some good things, and you know, he wasn't like lighting the world on fire, but.
Right.
He was consistent for the most part in what he did.
Mm-hmm.
And you just don't – they got lucky. I mean, it's not hard to say that. I mean, you don't like to say that because you don't want to say they were lucky because they won a World Series.
They made it to two
back-to-back.
But
there were parts that were definitely luck. I mean, you can't be down 7-3 against John Lester and not have a little luck coming with you in the wild card that year.
Or 6-2 in the eighth in Houston.
6-2 against Houston, and Correa just boots one.
Or the Blue Jays drop a fly ball in right field when you're down 3-0.
I mean, whether you want to say it or not, there's all kinds of luck involved.
Ball through the legs of Daniel Murphy at second. We can keep going on and on.
He boots one to the side and after
Hosmer. A horrible throw by Lucas Duda, or Hosmer's a dead man at the plate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And so I don't want to say the Royals didn't deserve the win. They did.
They
made their breaks. They were aggressive. But they didn't have a superstar. And that's a good thing because that means that you could build this team and not have a superstar and still win a World Series. You've done it before. But the question is, the landscape changes in Major League Baseball. And that was already 4 years ago. It's hard to believe. It seems like it was yesterday, and it was a great time. But the Royals, you know, they were so bad for so long, they were bound to get a few guys right in the draft because they're always drafting top five.
Exactly.
So you finally got a Hosmer.
You hit
on Moustakas, who took some time. There was, you know, he had to go to the minors for 10 days. You hit on Eric Hosmer, but these are guys that are top five picks. You've missed on Bubba Starling. You missed on Christian Colon. You missed on Luke Hochaver. When he's a number one overall pick, he can't be just a guy in the bullpen. Yeah. I mean, the Royals have missed left and right with their first-round picks. That's why the Bobby Witt Jr., why they're so excited. They think, basically everybody says he's a can't-miss prospect. Well, it's about time. Because the Royals seem to not draft the can't-miss prospects. They get the guy that ends up being the missed prospect when you could have had Evan Longoria and other guys some of those years. And you see, and you go back and look at these
the
drafts.
The landscape's changed on that,
yes.
too. And now, you know, David Glass is willing to spend the money on those that $7.889 million to sign Bobby Witt compared to, let's just take this guy instead of Evan Long. I don't even remember who they drafted.
That's why Hochaver was number one pick that year, because he didn't want to spend the money in other places. And I believe that was Al Baird was a GM at the time there. So, yeah, you have to build the team. And Dayton Moore rebuilt the team, and then you got a couple of high draft picks. Then, of course, Salvador Perez was not on the radar when he was a prospect. Yeah. Royals were that they deserve credit for finding him and signing him and developing him. No question, that was huge. But their rotation wasn't lights out. It would go five or six innings. Their bullpen was amazing. They put together an unbelievable bullpen, but they caught luck with Ryan Madsen. And you just had a nice team. Lorenzo Cain, the trade, the Greinke trade and the James Shields trade. You know, that those were the, basically I call it the Will Myers trade and the Zach Greinke trade. Those two trades, along with finally hitting on a few draft picks, that combination and getting a couple of value free agent signings that really panned out, that was the whole recipe for success in 2015. But is that going to be the recipe for success for 2022 or whenever the Royals contend again? It's going to be a different type of recipe because the game will have changed.
And the personnel's changed.
Absolutely.
There's no Zach Greinke go get
you don't
Alcides
have these,
Escobar and Lorenzo Cain right now.
Exactly. So you don't have the pieces to go restock your system right now, other than if Whit Merrifield's that guy, which leads people to say, and I've heard it in the Kansas City market, we love Whit to death, but we need to move him if it's the right deal, because there should be all kinds of teams bidding for his services because of his versatility and his speed. He can be a top lineup. He puts the ball in play. He's got some occasional pop. He's a good defender. Not great, but good. Can play all outfield spots. He can play short. He can play second. He can play first. He can play third if you need him. He can play every position but pitcher and catcher. And so that's where they say, listen, this is the one piece the Royals got that could bring back quite a bit, unless it's Mondesi, and that'd be dumb because you want to build around Mondesi. He's so young and has all the tools. But after Whit Merrifield, you don't have – you had Zach Greinke, as you mentioned. That got you a lot, and they were good guys. Lorenzo Cain, Alcides Escobar, obviously. You traded Will Myers, and you got James Shields.
Jake Odorizzi, I guess.
Right, but he wasn't a star prospect at the time. But he's part of the deal. Now he's a guy winning 10 games right now, and we're not even to the halfway point of the season. So you have to have the pieces, as you said, to build your system and make moves. And if you stand pat with Whit Merrifield, and he's already 30, which people can't believe, but he was a late bloomer, got to the bigs at the age of 27. If you hold on to him, even though it's a team-friendly contract, and he gets to 34 and he's not the player he was, obviously, now, then you made a mistake. Because you need to sell when your value is high. And I hate to always be sellers, and the Royals have always been sellers except for 14, 15, and 16, because they still went for it in 16, which was a mistake as well.
Yeah.
You do have to take advantage of guys' value when it's high.
Yeah.
And Whit Merrifield's value is as high as it probably ever will be.
Yeah, probably so.
So if you get a great deal, you have to listen, and you might have to take it. Now, if you don't get a really good deal, that you don't have to take it either, because he's got a team-friendly contract. But that's what – listen, Whit Merrifield's been compared to Ben Zobrist, because the Royals traded Ben Zobrist, and the Royals gave up three pitchers, and they gave up one star prospect in Sean Manaea. I mean, he threw a no-hitter last year, but now he's Tommy John surgery. He's out for this year.
Yeah.
But that was a top prospect, and that was for a rental player. The Royals gave up quite a bit for a two-month rental player or 3 months. Whit Merrifield's under contract for the next 4 years. So, in theory, you should get more for Whit Merrifield than the A's got for Ben Zobrist.
Oh, yeah.
You should.
Yeah.
And if you don't, then you don't move him.
And that's why the Royals are going to be selective if they do get rid of Whit Merrifield. They've got to have, like, the deal that they think is just
fills the holes that they have.
Out of this world that they know right when they make the move that we're going to be contending in 3 years from now.
Listen, they've got to get starting pitching. They have got to get starting pitching. They have got to get at least one top flight arm that could be their one or two starter 3 or 4 years from now, at least in a deal for Whit Merrifield.
Yeah.
They have to. They can't just settle for, you know, guys that are going to be back into the rotation guys in these type of trades. It's not going to help this team move forward.
We've got enough of those already.
Absolutely. Thank you. We got a lot of fours and fives and no one, twos, or maybe even threes. I'd say Duffy's a three right now. After that, they're all fours and fives.
and sixes.
And when you
sevens.
Don't, and if you don't, and if you don't have Greg Holland, Wade Davis, and Luke Hochaver, and Ryan Matson in your bullpen, and Kelvin Herrera, unless you have that type of bullpen, then you might be able to get away with it with a whole bunch of fours and fives, which is kind of what the Royals did in 15. But that doesn't apply anymore when the Royals bullpen is Ian Candy as your closer, and Willie Peralta is one of your guys in the bullpen. Not quite the same thing.
No.
Man.
Nothing's the same at all.
How quickly things can change. How quickly things can change. I mean, you know, late last year, everybody was all excited about the Royals. Whoa, O'Hearn's up, and he's doing great things. And then we got, you know, Dozier could be a big player, and, you know, Soler, and you got Bonifacio. Of course, he was suspended for 80 games. And Jorge Lopez is almost throwing a no-hitter. And we like the Philmeyer kid, and Keller's been great. And Duffy's going to come back better. And all the thinking, we got Jake Diekman, a nice pickup. And all the thinking was the Royals can be 500 team this year. And you look at all those things I just referred to, and almost all of those have gone the wrong direction.
Yeah. I was way less optimistic about the Royals, but it wasn't even this bad.
I was more optimistic than you, and shame on me. Your second straight year, I fell for that.
Yeah. I didn't think it was going to be this bad, but I definitely was not all in on what everybody was trying to say, because what do we say? A lot of that stuff in September doesn't really mean a whole lot.
Well, Billy Hamilton hasn't done much for you. You were hoping he would bring something. There's another free agent signing that hasn't been great, and will he bring you much value? Because I think part of the thinking was when you got Billy Hamilton was, hey, Jake Diekman, we're going to move these guys at the trade deadline, get something for him. Now, Diekman, you're going to get something for him. How much? I don't know. But are you really going to get a lot for Billy Hamilton?
No.
No.
Well, that was the whole point of Lucas Duda last year.
Exactly,
too.
And they got
not this year,
and they traded Duda for cash.
Year. Yeah, and they traded him for
they
cash.
They got a player
and brought him back again this year,
which I don't understand.
Huh?
Yeah, all right. Anyway, gonna be a while. I going into this year after the way they ended last year. Going into this year, I was feeling like, you know what, it might be 2021 instead of 2022-23 before they contend again. Yeah, I don't feel that at all.
No.
Especially when I look at that pitching situation. Okay, so the Royals back in action against the Twins tonight. They do have some guys that are exciting to watch. I like watching Merrifield. I like watching Mondesi. Hopefully Lopez will turn into a really good player. But after that, you know, what's exciting about the Royals? I keep hearing, you know, Dozier's fun to watch when he's at the plate, but now he's hurt. So we know they don't have much depth in the system.
There's absolutely the only one thing that I'm watching.
Salvi's fun to watch, but he's hurt.
Yeah, there's absolutely only one thing that I'm keeping track of with the Royals right now, and that's if Soler's going to break the single-season home run record.
Yeah, and that's a guy that hits a homer or strikes out, basically.
That's about all I've got right now that I can really say I'm interested in with the Royals.
Or if Mondesi wins a stolen base title and Witt wins a hit title. And I see these things that are put out there by the Royals or by people tied to the Royals. The Royals have the league leader in hits. They have the league leader in stolen bases. And they have the league leader in something else. I don't remember what it is. Triples? I think they're the league in triples. I'm like, golf clap. And what's your record? Because go back to the 15 team. They didn't lead the league in triples.
No.
They didn't lead. They were one of the top teams in stolen bases. But they didn't have a guy that led the league in stolen bases that year. And they didn't have a guy that led the league in hits. I'll trade all these statistics and take that team back. Because I saw something.
Can I get 95 wins?
I saw something really asinine, and I'll say it. It was on social media on Twitter not too long ago, and it was from the 610 sports people who, of course, can rip the Chiefs because they don't carry the Chiefs, but then they have all kinds of excuses
for the Royals
because they are the Royals rights holder in Kansas City. I'm like, this is so ridiculously horrible. You talk about sucking up to your bosses. So they put something out there like, at the time, the Royals' top four hitters are better than the Royals' top four hitters when they won the World Series. Would you agree? And they showed the numbers. Well, that's great and all. How many guys are in the lineup, Dusty? There's more than four.
Nine.
So I replied.
Tell me about the last five.
So I replied with, so why don't you compare the numbers of the 5-9 hitters versus the Royals' 5-9 hitters in 15? Also, maybe also compare the starting pitching from this year to that year. And, let's compare the bullpens between the 2 years. I mean, you talk about picking something out that is just so reaching for positivity. Listen, I want to be positive just like anybody else. But my Lord, you know what? You can slap a whole bunch of makeup and a whole bunch of lipstick and put a dress on a pig. It's still a pig.
Yeah.
All right? It's still a pig. You ain't changing it into a lady. It's a pig. Well, congrats. Wow, yay. That's the sign of a horrible team when all you've got to look forward to is, well, we got Soler. He's one of the league leaders in home runs and RBIs, and Witt's leading the league in stolen in hits. We lead the league in triples, and Mondesi is the league leader in stolen bases. That's great. Nowhere in that whole equation you just talked about was there anything mentioned about any of the pitching.
Yeah.
We also failed to mention how many times Jorge Soler struck out this year.
How many times the whole team struck out?
Yeah,
this
team doesn't put the ball in play. You want to compare this team to 15? Look at the contact rate.
Yeah.
Which I know the game has changed somewhat, although in 15, that's what made the Royals so unique. They put the ball in play, and other teams were swinging for the fences. And that's why the Royals won, one of the reasons. Small ball, moved runners around, they put the ball in play, they didn't strike out a lot. It's just ridiculous to me when people put out the top four hitters are putting up bigger numbers than the four hitters for the Royals back in. Which four hitters would you rather have? Would you rather have Merrifield, Dozier, Soler, and Mondesi, or would you rather have Hosmer, Moustakas, Escobar, and Kane? I'll take the latter for 1,000, Alex.
Yeah, I don't
Why?
Care. Why? I don't care.
Because
they'd
already
say.
Proven some things before yeah. that year. What has Mondesi proven before this year? Not much. What has Soler proven for this year? He can hit the ball really far. That's it. He didn't prove nothing. He hasn't proven he can stay healthy until right now, which, by the way, we've only played 2 months of the season, basically. He still could get hurt. What's Hunter Dozier proven before this year? Jack squat. Whereas Hosmer and Moustakas and Kane and Escobar all proven quite a bit before that year, 15. Oh, yeah, they went to the World Series in 14. But woohoo! We got four guys putting up some really nice numbers. The only numbers I care about as a fan are wins.
Yeah.
That's all I care about.
In professional sports, that's really all that matters in
that's
the end.
That's all I care about.
I mean, I know you know,
when they lose, I care about all these dumb numbers.
Yeah. I think when we talk about in college and in high school sports that it's not always about the wins and losses. It's, you know,
right.
For some of those
it
guys, it's about going up to the next level, you know, and for some of those guys, just about becoming better people and you know, having that experience. But, you know, college football would probably be an exception to that and men's right. college basketball, honestly.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, as a fan, for sure, it's in professional sports, you're about winning games.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it comes down to.
Absolutely.
I mean, you're not going to go pay for this product if they're not winning. That's what it comes down to.
Listen, look at the Golden State Warriors. They've won 3 championships in 5 years, okay? They've got Steph Curry sacrificed numbers to bring Durant in. Klay Thompson, if he was on a bad team, would have a lot better numbers. He has good numbers, no question.
Yeah.
You put him on a bad team, Klay Thompson is a superstar. But he's willing to give up some numbers. He isn't worried about how many points he scores, how many threes he makes. He wants to win. That's what made that a great team. Yeah, they got guys that can score and put up numbers, but they're not worried about their numbers at the end of the day. Obviously, Durant wasn't worried about his numbers, or he would have never left OKC to go to Golden State. So, you know, last night, I'll give you an example. This is just a sidebar. But last night, we had summer league basketball in Salina. And so our eighth graders-to-be, we have a team, and my son is on it. And he's one of our better shooters. Nobody will deny that. He's a pretty good outside shooter. Last night, he had a rough night, but in regards to shooting. But what I want to point out is, in the first game, my son is the point guard. So he handled the ball. His defense was okay. And he plays usually more minutes than most because they need him on the floor because of ball handling. He didn't attempt a single shot in the first game last night.
Yeah.
Not a single shot. But he wasn't really open either. And I told him after last night on the way home, I said, you know what? I'm proud of you that you didn't force a whole bunch of shots and you were selfish thinking, I got to get my points.
Yeah.
Because he didn't. Now, on the flip side, I wish he was more aggressive because he's a good shooter. He can't go games without getting shots. I mean, you just can't. Like, can you imagine Steph Curry not taking shots?
Yeah.
You need him to take shots. But Steph Curry could sometimes maybe not shoot as much, and they can still win, and Steph Curry's fine with that. And so my son, he didn't care that he hadn't shot the ball in the first game. He knew he hadn't shot the ball in the first game. But guess what the final result was?
A win.
We won.
Yeah.
We won by 9. I told him, I said, the only number you should be worried about is you got the win or not. And I said, you did. I said, so how do you contribute to the team? You didn't shoot the ball. Fine. You didn't attempt one shot. I don't know what his numbers were. I don't keep track of it. Maybe he ended up having 2 turnovers and 6 assists in that first game and played, 29 of the 30, or I guess they played 40 minutes running clock. Maybe he played 33 of the 40 minutes, played the most minutes. I don't know. And you play solid defense and this and that and get a steal or two or a deflection or take a charge. You can contribute and win games without having to score points all the time.
Yeah.
You know? And that's kind of the point here with the Royals. When all you've got to grab onto is guys now looking for individual numbers and getting performance bonuses for incentives in their contract is a sign of a really bad team. And the fact that fans are all caught up in, oh, Soler's got a whole bunch of homers, this is exciting. Or, ooh, Mondesi's leading the league in stolen bases. Or, ooh, the Royals have a whole bunch of triples. Or, ooh, Witt's leading the league in hits again. He could do that back-to-back years. Ask yourself, what do they have to show for it? Other than a paycheck, what do they have to show for it? Because last year they were brutal. And this record, they're 58-104, okay? So Whit Merrifield, think about this for a second. Whit Merrifield was willing to move positions because he wants to win so badly. Whit Merrifield last year led the American League in hits and stolen bases. He leads the American League in hits this year. And during that time, the Royals are 83-155. That's their record.
Yeah.
So it's like Jared Allen getting a whole bunch of sacks for a 2-14 Chiefs team. Does it help you?
No.
I mean, yeah. If you don't have that guy, are you worse? Yeah. But how much more worse?
Yeah. Like thus, how much worse can you actually get?
Thus, which adds to the argument, you better trade Witt if you can get a really good deal because you aren't winning with him.
Yeah.
It just, Jeff Van Gundy said it best. He goes, at the end of the day, it isn't about all your numbers or stat sheet stuffers. You're eventually judged on if you win. A lot of times, guys get in the Hall of Fame because they won championships, and they might not be actually better players than some other guys that put up a whole bunch of numbers,
mm-hmm.
but they're Hall of Famers because they performed in the playoffs or in the postseason or they got rings. That helps your resume, doesn't it?
Oh, without question.
Yeah. Okay, NBA draft is tonight, and this is where you make or break franchises. And the Pelicans, they got the number one overall pick. Gee, I wonder who they're going to take. Zion Williamson, I believe, might be the guy they pick, and Zion talks about going number one tonight, because we know he will.
I never saw myself as even being a top three, top four pick, and for people to think that I can go one, it means a lot to me. Showing that my hard work is paying off, but I just want to get drafted, period.
Well, you're going to get drafted, and you're going to be the first name off the board tonight, Zion. What about the draft as a whole? Bob Myers is the Golden State Warrior president. Of course, we mentioned they've won 3 titles in the last 5 years, and he says that everybody needs shooting. And you think about Golden State, they need it too if Klay Thompson's going to miss all of next year. And if Durant doesn't come back, or even if he does, he's not going to play probably all year with a ruptured Achilles. Golden State needs shooting. We saw that in the NBA playoffs, didn't we?
Yeah.
Oh, boxing one on Curry and nobody else can make a shot. They need shooting. So does everyone else, he says.
If Klay's out and who, you know, whatever our team is, we're likely to be diminished in that area. Does that mean you try to do that through trade, free agency, draft? The hard part is every team, I mean, shooting is at a premium, maybe at the highest premium it's ever been. If you watch the finals and somebody mentioned, you know, the team that made the most threes every game won that game.
That is true. Excellent point. So the NBA draft is tonight. The Utah Jazz made a big move yesterday. They acquired Mike Conley from the Grizzlies, and they gave up quite a bit for a guy that's been in the league 12 years. I think the Jazz gave up too much.
I 100% agree.
Because the Jazz,
I couldn't believe when I saw everything they gave
up. The Jazz gave up Grayson Allen, Kyle Korver, which is no big deal. He's at the end of his career. Jay Crowder, a serviceable player. Grayson Allen, a younger guy that might turn out to be something. The number 23 pick in this year's draft, and in a future first-round pick for one guy.
I think that's probably the thing that surprised me the most was adding a future first-round pick added to this year's first-round pick.
Mike Conley. And you take on the money, too, which has a super – he's the highest-paid point guard in the
league. Going into his 13th year.
Yeah.
He played 12 years in Memphis.
He did have a career-high 21 points a game last year. He's had some injury problems as well, but he's going to the Jazz. So does that make the Jazz a major contender in the West with this move or not? Does it really enhance their chances a lot? I mean, they have him and Donovan Mitchell. That's a really good backcourt. They got Gobert at center, who's really, really good.
Yeah. It helps them, I think, but I don't know that it puts them into that discussion of what we were talking about yesterday.
I agree.
I just don't think that moves the needle enough for them to
I agree.
to be able to be one of the top four in the end of this thing and just say automatically, you know, and just saying, oh, we got a shot at this.
It's a bold move, Cotton. It's a bold move by the Jazz. So the draft tonight, here is the order. If I can pull it up, I had it there for a moment. I'll pull it back up. The number two pick is going to be Ja Morant from Murray State. He'll be the point guard for Memphis because Memphis just traded the point guard.
I think that made it pretty clear that they're picking Ja Morant tonight.
Yeah, if the Grizzlies don't draft. Well, listen. Listen, the only way the Grizzlies don't draft Ja Morant is if the Pelicans don't draft Zion Williamson. That is the only way that happens.
Exactly.
The Knicks are expected to take R.J. Barrett, although there's some talk they might not, but I would think they would. And the Lakers are technically picking at four, but they're picking for the Pelicans. And word is the Pelicans like Culver, Jarrett Culver from Texas Tech, more than DeAndre Hunter of Virginia. And then there, Kobe White of North Carolina expected to go maybe number six to the Suns. DeAndre Hunter could slide to number seven to the Bulls. There's some shooting. Darius Garland is a point guard, young guard out of Vanderbilt, and they say that he'd go to Cleveland. I'm like, Cleveland just drafted a point guard, Colin Sexton, last year. So I don't know how that would work.
Yeah.
And they'd have two undersized guards. I don't know if that works in the NBA so much, but it's Cleveland, so who knows what they'll do.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see a trade, and I think you could see a trade with the Pelicans trading out of four. The Hawks want to move up, supposedly. The Hawks would love to get R.J. Barrett. The Knicks say, we're not taking your 8 and 10th picks for R.J. Barrett. So they don't want to go down. I will say, after the top three picks, there seems to be a fall off.
Uh-huh.
But you know what? They've said that before in the draft.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody said the other day that there was, I don't know what year the draft was, but the draft with Jimmy Butler, well, Kawhi Leonard was a 15th overall pick. He wasn't even a top 10 pick. But it might have been Leonard and Butler. But anyway, there's three superstars or free agents this year that are really, really good, of course. It must have been Kawhi, Jimmy, and somebody else. They were not top 10 picks. So we sit here going in, all the experts say, well, it's three picks and then everybody else. Well, that's not how it works. There are guys. Yeah. Jokic was a second-round pick, and he's a stud for the Nuggets.
Yeah.
So we know guys can turn out to be great. I mean, Steph Curry wasn't a top 5 or 10 pick. Draymond Green wasn't. So Klay Thompson wasn't. Just look at the Warriors for an example.
I've argued about that for a long time. When people talk about this quote unquote super team that the Warriors built,
right?
They built it through the draft.
Well, Tony Parker was on top 10 pick.
Other than Kevin Durant,
people didn't know who Tony Parker was. He's a guy from France. What is the Spurs doing getting all these Ginobili? Who's this guy from Argentina? They turned out pretty good.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
The Spurs have made it to the playoffs 22 years in a row. They've never had a lottery pick, obviously, in that time. Their last lottery pick was Tim Duncan.
I got to say, Tim Duncan was a pretty big one.
That's what I'm saying, though. They made it in that time of making the playoffs. They have not had a lottery pick.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. 22 years in a row they made the playoffs. So, obviously, there's guys that are better than just the ones that are in the
Which
top five.
Kawhi Leonard would be one.
You know,
Tony Parker, Ginobili.
And they didn't draft Leonard, but they traded for him on draft night.
Yeah.
And basically the same
15th
thing.
15th overall.
You know, and so they, you know, they had to trade up to get up to 15 in that draft. You can do it. You can get guys without being in the top three and still have a lot of success.
So let's throw this out here at the end of the show then. Will any Jayhawks or Wildcats be selected in the draft tonight?
Oh, I'm going to say no.
I don't even have to think that long. No.
I mean, like, maybe Diedrich might get picked at 58 or something like that, but that's the only way it's going to happen.
Listen, it may happen. It could happen. You very well could be right that somebody will take Diedrich Lawson late in the second round. I would be very surprised. And if I'm an NBA guy, there's no way I draft Diedrich Lawson. There is no way. Not because I don't think he's a great guy, not because I don't think he'd be a good NBA player. I just wait it out, and then I can sign him as a free agent.
Yeah.
Because there's not a huge demand for him. I still think Dean Wade is a guy that could end up being an undrafted guy that could really make an impact if he can stay healthy. I think he could be a perfect role player on a team, and he stretched the floor as a four. I still think Dean Wade has pro potential, no doubt. But I don't think there's any way Dean Wade gets drafted because of the health issues.
Yeah.
Barry Brown, I don't see getting drafted. We know Stokes isn't getting drafted. And Diedrich Lawson is an unathletic, below-the-rim player. And in the NBA, that doesn't go very well. I mean, it can be done. I'm not saying he can't make it in the league. He can. But you don't spend a high draft pick on Diedrich Lawson or even probably a draft pick at all. So the Jayhawks have had a first-round draft pick, I believe, or somebody drafted every year since 2010. So that's 10 years in a row. That streak, I'm going to predict, ends tonight.
Yeah.
No Jayhawks, no Wildcats in the draft tonight. We both agree on that?
Yeah. By the way, Clay's the other free agent in that draft class of Kawhi and Jimmy
Butler. There
you go. Butler.
Yeah. Right, and I mentioned Clay.
Yeah, Clay was 11th, Kawhi was 15th, and where did Jimmy Butler get picked? 30th.
So the 11th, 15th, and 30th picks of that draft are three of the top five free agents on the market right now who have had unbelievable careers, and they weren't top 10 draft picks.
Jimmer Fredette was picked above all of them.
And he didn't pan out. See, that's why it's
a crap. Kemba Walker's really the only, well, I mean, Kyrie was the number one pick that year. But Kemba Walker really is the only other guy that's even lived up to any of the kind of hype that the other three have.
Yeah. It's a crapshoot, man.
And Tristan Thompson was the four pick, but he's, you know.
Well, and you look at, you know, remember who took, was it the Blazers that took Greg Oden instead of Kevin Durant?
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, you take Durant. But you have a 7-foot guy that was so good in college. How do you pass on that guy?
Yeah.
And he would turn out to be like the kind of like Sam Bowie. Whole bunch of injuries, and, you know, we know the whole story about, you know, Jordan wasn't number one overall pick.
Yeah.
It might be the greatest player ever lived. Now, LeBron obviously was number one pick. That was pretty easy. And Zion seems to be the no-brainer number one overall pick, of course, and we'll see what he does in his career. I think Ja Morant's going to be really good. I really do. I like his game.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be really good in the NBA. He's going to flourish. I think R.J. Barrett's going to be there's some people say he's a bit of an enigma. I think he's going to do better in the NBA than he did at Duke. Because, I mean, Barrett was really good at Duke, but he was up and down at times. I think as long as he has a work ethic, I think he's a guy that just fits the NBA. I think about Paul Pierce. He was a really good college player, no question. But you could just tell his game was suited for the NBA.
Yeah.
And you know, Andrew Wiggins' game is more suited for the NBA than in college, as we've seen, although he's been somewhat of a disappointment.
Definitely.
And Andrew Wiggins, of course, was the number one overall pick. So, and then there's guys that miss, and then there's guys that are can't-miss prospects that end up not being what you thought they were because they can't handle the money, can't handle the pressure, can't handle the fame, and then just flame out. So everybody thinks Zion's a can't-miss guy. Could be. He also could blow out his knee his rookie year and never be the same. So you really have no idea. That's why it's called life. If we knew what was going to happen in the future, it'd be pretty boring, and we'd all be rich because we'd cash in. 10:08's our time, 68 degrees. Anybody think Zion won't go number one? I didn't think so.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.